So now we're going to take a look at the global perspective, Smart Planet. And we're talking specifically around workflows. We've got three great panelists for us today, speaking to mostly to the distribution piece of the chain. But why don't you guys just take turns, introduce yourselves, tell us who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Ryan Benson from Lionsgate. I'm in digital media servicing. So basically, I work with our operations and our marketing and just make sure the platforms, the digital platforms, whether it's EST, VOD, SVOD, make sure they have our content. That's what my team does.
Awesome. Simon?
Yeah, hi, I'm Simon James. I head up our sales engineering organization at New Line. We offer an end-to-end video distribution platform that's used by anyone who has content rights. So that's from pay TV companies like Sky in the UK through to networks like Univision and sports organizations like the NFL and NBA.
Awesome. Last but not least.
Hello. Hello. Hi. I'm Jason Kassen, the CEO and co-founder of FilmTrack. FilmTrack is a contract and rights management SaaS-based solution that also does finance, royalties, participations, et cetera. And there are more companies that use FilmTrack for their rights and royalties than any other solution out there, so we're very proud of that. And that's all I have to say about that.
Data's like a box of chocolates, yes. People. All right, so first of all, we're aspiring to this global economy, right? We certainly have taken a very domestic product and done our best to weave it through internationally, but we certainly aren't. We haven't reached the Holy Grail. And with all this talk about AI and the importance of data, do you look in at your job and say, yeah, this is totally driven by data, or are you just making sausage and just getting it out?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, it's like, you know, it's time to make the donuts. Because I do love donuts, when I'm in meetings with, you know, the senior executives and higher level, Lionsgate has several SVOD platforms, and we're using those SVOD platforms to drive what's next, and they're looking at that data. And, you know, not to the scale that Netflix is right now, but...
tough act to follow,
yeah,
right?
It is. But like the other gentleman said, you know, everyone's 4 or 5 years behind on that, but and trying to play catch up. But, you know, they're a great example for us to follow. On a daily basis, I just want to make sure, you know, I'm making sure, hey, guys, is this on iTunes? Is this on Amazon? Is this on, on all the cable systems? So, but in the big picture, yeah, we're definitely trying to use that data.
And ultimately, like when you're serving customers around the world, I mean, are customers coming to you saying, hey, I just need A and B to get to C? Or are they thinking about a data strategy around it? Are they asking you for specific tools? And we can talk a little bit also about your integrated tools in terms of reporting and dashboards and coming back. But is this something that they're turned on to, or is it something that...
I think the main focus, certainly for us, and it's because it's where our partners' focus is, they're looking for tools that help them acquire new viewers, help them obviously upsell and cross-sell to those users, and crucially, you know, reduce any churn that they might be seeing. So, you know, data obviously drives that, but the job we play and the role we play is putting the tools in the hands of humans, that enable them to get a view across all of the data that they have and achieve those three things. So looking at, watch data, obviously that's the obvious one, but then drilling down and cross laying over the user data, and then also increasingly so, we offer customer support centers for our partners, so laying that customer support data over as well. And those kind of three layers enable us to put tools in the hands of our partners to drive their business, grow their user base, and keep those users active. So I think that's kind of what we see on a day-to-day basis.
And really, you're kind of the step just before that, right?
Correct. So we're kind of further up the chain typically, which is that our users typically are looking at what's available on their library, what can be exploited. But then, you know, on a very international sense, I mean, FilmTrack, some of you know, grew up on the international side, doing international distribution, film and TV. And what is challenging about that is not only finding the pockets of availability, but having a system that also can tell you, is it worthwhile to do that distribution? Meaning, do you already have a French dub? Yes, you have French availability, but is it worth actually exploiting in France? The answer is always yes, of course. It's always worth exploiting in France. The questions about the what's integral to the decision-making even before distribution is it available? Do I have the assets? What are the implications of this distribution? And then post, it's as that money flows back via royalties and then all the way up the chain to participations, ensuring that you can allocate and divide appropriately by territory and by language and all that sort of stuff. So being able to have a good system of record, whatever that system it is, maybe it's FilmTrack, but even if it's not, you know, having the ability to record the appropriate granularity, and then you can get the appropriate data sets out of it.
Well, and it's interesting, all right? So we create content, we got a place to put it for distribution, we got a place to do the deals to get it put into that place for distribution. How much, and we won't speak of the Nirvana, right? We won't speak of the Holy Grail, right? But how much are your systems, quote unquote, and I'm categorizing you in big buckets now, not your individual companies, how much do you see that data overlap? Is it a question where, because I would assume that every customer, on each of your chains, including the consumer, which is your customer, would you want to see some return in terms of, all right, what's going on? How is this doing, right? So do you see that now? Do pieces of that exist now, or is that something we're still going to need to aspire to in the ecosystem?
I think, yeah, we definitely see pieces of it now, but as the three of our different companies interact, you know, we actually use FilmTrack or a subset of it, InventTrack. I don't know how it relates for like inventory and stuff. And so I'm checking that every day if we do have to, you know, find a French dub or something like that. And then we all actually, you know, one of our SVOD services works with New Line as well. And so we're interacting with companies like these every day, but one of our preferred vendors that we use on a daily basis, I'm closer to them than my coworkers at the company, because I have to rely on them for the data that they're giving me. If content is ready, if content is usable on a worldwide basis, so that relationship is vital to me.
That's really interesting, by the way, what you say about you're closer to them, because I feel that way too sometimes with our clients. That I'm closer to them than maybe my own children. I'm a terrible father, and I'm not really. Both my kids were bar mitzvahed in this very room, by the way.
Hey, mazel tov.
One was a bat mitzvah. It's a great place to hold it. I can introduce you to the special event. But it's really interesting because I feel that way sometimes, because the kind of inquiries we're getting on the data that's flowing back, particularly where you're able to make better informed decisions, sort of the decisions Netflix is making on the acquisition, but even post that, making decisions around how long to keep things out, whether to make a sequel, whether to whether to license certain rights to certain players again, given the way they performed, all that data is available to you now, and it's just a function of putting in the proper analytics layer on top of it to ask the right questions. But I think the next generation of analytics is you don't have to ask the question. It sort of tells you the trends.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we're seeing. So the tool that we put on top of all that data obviously relies on data coming back in. So when our partners drive user acquisition programs, they're trying to make sure that those programs obviously are bundled, promoting a piece of content that they know from data that's come in is going to appeal to a particular segment or a particular channel they're using to acquire that user. They then will use the tool to track the lifetime journey of that user, see how their usage evolves in terms of the devices they use, in terms of the length and the amount of content they watch, and all of that you know, feeds back into the larger system that then informs the next marketing program or the next kind of program they drive. So it's definitely a, you know, it's a cliche, but it's a virtuous circle that is feeding back into itself to inform the marketers that are really driving the business.
And that's on a B2C side. Just a quick note on that. We have a system that on a B2B side where before the actual distribution takes place, where you're sending screeners out to somebody, to a potential buyer, being able to know whether that buyer is telling the truth, that they actually watched it and how long they watched it and from where they watched it and all that kind of stuff. It's a little Big Brother, a little CIA, but it's very useful B2B importance to know when somebody says, yeah, it's really not for us, didn't love the ending. It's like, dude, you watched 10 minutes, and I can tell. And by the way, it looks like that IP address was an iPad in your kid's house or whatever. But
yeah, but that, you know, the whole Big Brother CIA thing, right? The reality is why are silos? Because you don't have any visibility into what's in there. You just, oh, that's the corn silo, right? You don't know anything that's in there, right? They work inside of there. I have no idea. But these tools should be offering insight for people that normally wouldn't have purview into probably a very complex process that they wouldn't understand necessarily because they're not in the trenches. But I mean, isn't that all part of it? You know, Simon, you do a lot of work for sports company. You're certainly not just Hollywood centric. Do you see certain segments that are championing that and saying, "Ooh, yeah, I need more dashboards"? Because look, in the old, the old days, you're like, no, I don't want him to see any of this stuff. I just want him to know my numbers and I'm killing it. Or her, pardon me. Do you see customers that are coming to you, or, you know, a league or even on the network side?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first sort of partner that I would that comes to mind is the work that we do with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. They, you know, if you look at the way they've evolved their service with us, they're extremely innovative in the way they're personalizing the experience, you know, in similar ways to, I know, you know, Netflix have really innovated a lot in that area. And the UFC are trying to, you know, emulate that. And they're using the tools that we put in their hands to do that. They're also, you know, putting tools in the hands of their users to help them inform the systems that inform back into us. So things like, you know, following favorite fighters, things like obviously building watch lists and playlists, that all of that obviously feeds back into our recommendation engine and informs the UFC themselves to help them segment their user base and use that segmentation information to go after new users that match that kind of profile. They're also using that dashboard to identify churn characteristics and make sure that the messages that they are putting in front of users are relevant to them. So it's not just a case of they're about to churn, hit them with an offer. It's if they're about to churn, hit them with a personalized offer. Hit them with something that's based off of data. Hit them with something that, you know, we know they've watched or we know is relevant to the fighters they like. And that's a way to sort of bring them back in and get them using again. And they've seen some great results in terms of they're well known for the live content they carry, but the usage in the archive content and the VOD library has seen some really significant increases because of the efforts they've put into that with us.
And that's a global business, right?
It is. Yeah, I think they're in like 196 countries. I think they've got a user in about 196 countries. So, very global. Sports is interesting because, you know, you get regional pops depending on which fighters are or which, you know, basketball players or football players might be doing particularly well at a certain time. But yeah, it's a global business, and you know, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the results they've had using the Newline platform.
You know, and all right, so we talked a little bit about the consumer. Let's talk a little bit about on the B2B side. You know, Ryan, home entertainment, when we used to, you know, make shiny round discs and put them into stores, was an easy game. We didn't know how good we had it, right? What do you see in terms of, you're obviously delivering to multiple places now, it's not one to many, right? You used to deliver to the replicating plant and you were like, okay, my job is done. what do you see in terms of kind of the future of your business unit and where you're going? Do you feel that this could be something that it could be a heck of a lot easier as you look at the big picture, grand scheme of things?
Yeah, it could always be easier. You've got, you know, I think somebody said earlier there's 4,000 deliverables or something like that.
400 iterations of the same thing.
And it's insane. I worked at MGM in the early 2000s when we were just turning out, you know, 60, 70 DVDs a month and just hanging back after that. So, I mean, not hanging back, but it was easy. It was a
right, high-fiving, done, toss it over the fence, done.
Exactly.
I mean,
okay. And so now it's you know, I'm actually on a committee on the DEG, the subcommittee, I guess you would call it, working on IMF, and something like that. It's like you spoke about. It's kind of a nirvana. Like if we have one file deliverable that just goes to everybody, and it would be a dream come true. I mean, you're always going to have the one or two holdouts on the retailer side that are like, nope, we can only take this. Sorry. And so then it becomes a huge question of who's in charge there. Is it the tail wagging the dog or what? And you know, we want our content everywhere and access it, everyone to access it, but we don't want to have. I speak personally. I don't want them having, you know, telling me exactly how to do it and what to do. But so you have to find a balance there.
What about on some of the small, like, so take Tribeca for an example, right? So when that happens and you feel you're in a partnership and you're like you can create the deliverable spec, did you help form and build that, or was that more of a just a?
I didn't personally. That's a Lionsgate.
Yeah, sorry, I'm speaking for Lionsgate.
It's a Lionsgate company, the Tribeca shortlist, the SVOD service, and but yeah, it was all done in house. But we, you know, we work with a company like New Lion and they service the platform, but it's something that can also be very, data driven. Is, you know, we obviously see what people are watching, and they have, you know, guests come in and have their picks for the month, you know, celebrities or directors and things like that, because they know what people are going to want to watch. So we can with our huge library, and it's not just a Lionsgate content. They reach out to other libraries as well, but they can definitely focus because they know what's hot.
And it's geared towards that segment as well, right?
Exactly.
It's branded and its vibe and feel is for that particular audience. Well, you spoke a little bit. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna pick up on that and say that you know, I think the Tribeca shortlist service is a good example of kind of human curation. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about data and AI and the role that plays, and it absolutely does. But I think one of the powerful things in that service is seeing, you know, I picked Jeremy Irons, being a British actor, but it's seeing an actor talk about films that he is passionate about and why he likes them. And that, you know, reaps incredible, it differentiates that service, but it also reaps results. When you look back at the data that comes back from those recommendations, you can't, you know, if you see one of your favorite actors or one of your favorite directors sit there and describe why they believe in this film and why they're recommending it as part of their kind of shortlist, that it goes without saying, that's incredibly powerful.
So I was going to say, we talked a little bit about IMF, and IMF is a whole other conversation, and you know, similar to, you know, APIs or metadata, right? It's a conversation that's continued for a long time. We talk about smart contracts as being your nirvana. You're somebody that deals with highly localized content distributed around the world. Do you see this as being part of the evolutionary process? We'll never get to the humanless part of it, right? And that's silly to even think about it. But the idea that legal can make something, put it in a system, and that it's going to drive different processes down the road, is that something that you feel is a reality, or are we way off?
I think it's an approach. I don't know if it's a reality of, as you called it earlier, a Nirvana-type situation, because, again, a lot of these deals are still done at MIP or at Cannes or at Berlin or, you know, AFM, and they're done. Sometimes there's different motivations for getting these deals done. I'm doing this deal because of that deal, and there's some horse trading going on. And the contracts, you know, are encompassing not just rights information and distribution information, but also financial information as well, in terms of the flow of royalties, the flow of participations, etc. And so, yeah, it would be great to have a template. And certainly, you know, we get asked all the time, hey, you know, our system creates, in other words, a lot of our users put in the main data points of a contract by a salesperson or an admin at a festival or at a market or something like that, and then that actually generates the agreement. So sometimes we actually generate the agreement, but other times, particularly when we're uploading or onboarding a new customer, they want us to actually do OCR, effectively, of existing contracts and pull that into the system. And I always tell people, well, that's about 99.9% effective. And they're like, that sounds great. And I'm like, no, that's terrible, you know, as relates to being off by a zero on, you know, on one page here. That would have a huge impact. So I do think there's a place for smart contracts, and we're getting closer to that by insisting upon a certain rigor around the way contracts are encoded and the way distribution deals are conducted. And we're seeing distribution deals change, too. I mean, Netflix and others are creating deals, output deals, that it used to be onesie, twosie, I do this deal, do that deal. There's my whole library, but 30% of the content has to be like this and 40% has to be like that. And it's a much different type of modeling. And that's having an impact on the kinds of solutions we need to provide and the kind of ways they need to look at the data. The other thing is, folks, particularly on the exec side, where they used to want to run reports, now it's all executive dashboards. So it's all about, I don't want to have to keep asking the same questions over and over. I want a dashboard when I log in to show me current state and trending. And that trending or current state could be on the basis of anything, sales, recoupment, invoicing, contract management, et cetera. But that's the level that people often want to see the data.
I would just say that, you know, I mean, ultimately, when you look at those types of dashboards as well, right, it's a heck of a lot easier than reading a contract in French or Russian or German, right? I mean, do you think that these visibility tools are going to make our lives obviously easier, but is it going to be more difficult in the short term as we kind of get over these hiccups and hurdles?
I've never heard somebody tell me, and we have hundreds of customers, all of whom do contracts, the contracts are getting much easier now. I just, for whatever reason, that doesn't, you know, what I do hear and heard earlier today, it's much more complex now because of X and X, where the distribution methodology may seem simpler, but the contracts behind it, and particularly when you're crossing titles and crossing territories, and you've got to incorporate how the participations will flow from the financials, and how royalties will flow incoming, and whether you're crossing royalties on this deal or not, it gets very complicated. And then, on top of all that, then trying to get that data into the system and validate it and calculate it and consume your guarantees and issue invoices, it's not getting easier, sadly. I wish I could tell you, you know, I hate to be Debbie Downer or, you know,
I'm afraid I have to agree with you there. I mean, I think that matrix of complexity is being driven by territories and devices. And at the same time, as we are all aware, the actual rights are getting more complex in terms of how they're being carved out as well in across that matrix. So not simple, but from, you know, we obviously come sort of downstream from Jason, and the sort of mechanics of picking up those rights and sucking in that data is certainly improving, I'd say, and you know, there are efficiencies that were being found as more systems are cloud hosted. We're obviously starting to see improvements in the workflow there for sure.
What about workflow based on location? I mean, you know, ultimately you have, and forgive me because I don't know exactly your business operations, but I assume you've got people in foreign lands doing things for you. Do they report back into the home base through a system? Is it still all email and fax and Excel?
Well, it's a lot of email and fax. And Lionsgate's the nature of our company is a little bit different, that we, you know, sell off a lot of foreign rights before the films are made, and then get those rights back. And so that's where our real challenge now is globally, is as we're gaining the rights back to a lot of content, and we're acquiring, you know, we just merged with Starz and they have a ton of content, figuring out all those rights. And, you know, we have one TV show that we only have rights on one platform. So delivering to one platform is just as hard as delivering to every platform from our perspective.
Sure.
So Yeah, so back to your previous question about dashboards, sometimes, you know, looking at those things does make it a heck of a lot easier because we know, okay, we have to get this title to these two platforms, but it can't go to these four platforms because somebody else has those rights. But globally, because we push out a lot of that content to other people, we don't have, I personally don't have a lot of interaction globally, but, you know, we have offices in, sure, in the UK and stuff that we, and so we work pretty closely with our UK office, and because they have different rights than we have on things.
Sure. New Line, you guys have offices in London and all over the world, right? I mean,
New
York, I know.
Yeah, headquartered in New York. I think we've got about 19 or so offices. So the operations side is covered in Asia, in London, and in New York, and on the West Coast as well. So
when we talk about global workflows, I mean, is this something that transcends all of those different businesses that are in other places and all report into the same system, or is it still piecemeal? Because when you talk about an advanced workflow, that's what I would imagine, where every little hub all comes back in and gives you better feedback around how your business is doing.
Well, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think the...
Or is it still old school? That's the other issue, right?
I wouldn't say that. I think the challenge is like... with the only real sort of challenge you have to be aware of globally with regards to data is that kind of personal data, where there's sort of legislative reasons why data can only be stored in certain countries or others. But above that, because you know we host all our systems in our own sort of private cloud, the physical location of that operations person or that business person has kind of become somewhat of an irrelevance for file-based workflows. I think for the live work we do, then having people, you know, in operations centers monitoring workflows is, I think the geographical location becomes more prevalent there and important.
We have quite a bit of business overseas, and a lot of our clients, like these guys, are multi-sided, so they have users everywhere, and the system, therefore, has to support a lot of things from a technical standpoint, but it's all one system, ultimately. So they're getting the advantage of the combined workflow, but you know, we have a client in Scandinavia that is storing the same data, but in Finnish, in Norwegian, in Icelandic, in Danish, and Swedish, and depending on which endpoint is looking at the data, the system will automatically render it in the appropriate local. And we're seeing more and more of the need for not only storing the data in that way, but presenting it and presenting and being able to, you mentioned earlier about contracts in German or this or that, you have to be able to encode that, store it, make it meaningful for everyone else who's using it. And the other piece that we've really worked hard on over the last few years is adding an entire API layer to our system so that all of the information is accessible for additional workflows downstream, whether it's integration with like a scheduling system like WideOrbit, which we find ourselves doing, or with an ERP solution, or with a big finance solution, SAP or Oracle, et cetera, to make the information that they have in their contract and rights system available globally via API, assuming you have the appropriate permissions, able to drive the connectivity a little more elegantly.
Well, we have like a minute and a half. Anybody have any questions before we run off to break? Any questions out there? All right. You guys will be sticking around, obviously, for the break, hopefully for the rest of the day. Hey, let's give a round of applause for the panel. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.